This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Nā mai, haere mai, kia ora tēnā koe. Free FM 89.0 on a Sunday afternoon. What's on my mind? The opinion is mine. Column comment. History and song for June 21, New Zealand Hit Parade, June 21, 1970. World politics with Gary Schofield, Dwayne Porter, Trevor Lloyd before 2 o'clock this afternoon. Weather is for the rain that we had this morning is easing this evening. Fog developing overnight. Nor'westerlies dying out in the evening. And for tomorrow, we're in for some morning and evening cloud, otherwise fine with light winds. Going for a high today of 17 degrees. We've got 17 degrees in the city, overnight low of 6 degrees. There's a few things going on in Hamilton City. I have to tell you, ratepayers, that we're going to get water meters and they're going to be rolled out in the next couple of years. Didn't I hear some former politicians in the city say no to water meters? Well, it's going to happen, folks. So keep up with the council, ring the council, complain. That's what they're there for. Then the council rails against fare hikes. Hamilton city leaders are accusing fellow regional decision makers of a breach of trust. This is over to Tuhia. The headlines in the Waikato Times this week, Hamilton city leaders have hauled fellow Waikato regional council decision makers over the tracks, accusing them of a breach of trust around an unexpected 25% hike for Tuhia passengers. Some of the city councillors were, well, they didn't have much to say, but one councillor, Graham Mead, was not so diplomatic. And I quote, "I was ticked off, honest, and for me to have an informal discussion that's then been tabled with another regional council for me is not acceptable. It's a breach of trust." And sometimes commentator on the station, Russell Armitage, is not happy. Because something has happened with the bus service that he uses, that he doesn't like. It's going to be changed. It's going to be axed because they want to make Victoria Street a non-bus centre on the road. I've used that bus coming in from back from the dentist to take me to the transport centre. Why? Do the buses have to be changed every month or so? It's not on for the passengers. If you want to keep passengers riding round on them, get out of their cars, stop mucking the people of the city around. Are you listening, Hamilton City Council? 172197, June 21, 2026. This day, 1964, over 7,000 Wellingtonians saw the Beatles in Wellington.
I should be sleeping like a log, but when I get home to you, I find the things that you do will make me feel alright. You know I work all day to get your money.
1982, in royal news, the birth of Prince William, son of the Prince and Princess of Wales. The future king is 43 today.
Once upon a time when we were friends, I gave you my heart, the story ends. No happy ever after, now we're friends.
Music 2001, the death of blues great John Lee Hooker.
Baby back, walk in the dark.
1919 this day, World War One. The German fleet scuttled at Scarpa Flow off the coast of Scotland in Orkney. 9 sailors are killed.
You land of hope, my hope is strong. God makes me mightier yet. On sovereign ground belongs renown. Once more thy crown is set.
It was this day in 1982, John Hinckley found not guilty by reasons of insanity for trying to assassinate Ronald Reagan. A judge ordered Hinckley to be released in 2016.
For far too long, I've had nothing new to show to you. Goodbye, dry eyes. I've watched your plane fade off west of the moon. And it felt so strange to walk away alone.
And in Coronation Street this day, 1935, actor Peter Dudley, Bert Tilsey, was born. He died in 1983. And it was this day in American music, 1932, R&B singer O.C. Smith was born. O.C. Smith died in 2001. He was famous for the song, The Son of Hickory Hollers Tramp.
Well, the path was deep and wide from footsteps to our cabin. Above the door there burned a scarlet lamp. And late at night a hand would knock, and there would stand a stranger. Yes, I'm the son of Hickory Hollers Tramp. Yeah, the weeds were high, the corn was dry, when Daddy took to drinking. Him and Sally Walker, they up and ran away. Then Mama shed a silent tear and promised 14 children, I swear you'll never see a hungry day. When Mama sacrifice the pie, the neighbors started talking, but we were much too young to understand the things they said. All we really cared about was Mama's chicken dumplings and a goodnight kiss before we went to bed. Whoa, you know the path was deep and wide from leading to our cabin. Above the door there burned the scarlet lamp. And late at night a hand would knock, and there would stand a stranger. Yes, I'm the son of Hickory Hollers Tramp. When Daddy left and destitution came upon our family, not one neighbor volunteered to lend a helping hand. So just let them gossip all they want. She loved us and she raised us. The proof is standing here, a full-grown man. Last summer, Mama passed away and left the ones who loved her.
Each and every one is more than grateful for their birth. And each Sunday she receives a big bouquet of 14 roses with a card that reads, "The greatest mom on earth." Whoa, you know the path was deep and wide from footsteps leading to our cabin. Above the door there burned the card of land. I'm the son of Hickory Hollow's tramp.
FM 89.0, independent community media. That is O.C. Smith and the son of Hickory Hollow's tramp. He was born this day in 1932. The New Zealand Hit Parade, chart.org.nz. History and Song, June 21, 1971. Number one New Zealand, Craig Scott, Star-Crossed Lovers, written by Harold Greenfield and Neil Sedaka. Scott's only New Zealand number one. Born Dunedin, bank teller, 1969, a member of the band. And, of course, they had... The band was Revival. Eddie Grant's Viva Bobby Joe, and then Scott went solo with HMV, later EMI. And of course, this was a tearjerker. Kind of Romeo and Juliet story. Star-Crossed Lovers.
Father, dear father, I come to confession, hoping to find peace of mind. Father, I've fallen in love with an angel, but she's not one of our kind. If it's a sin to want her and need her, this is what I'm guilty of. She won't believe in the things we believe in, but she believes in my love. Would you refuse to give me your blessing if I should follow my heart? Father, please tell me, are we so different? And is our love so unwise? We both believe there is the one God in heaven, but we see him through different eyes.
Last heard of selling real estate. Yeah, his popularity waned after the end of Happenin' and Sing. He did come back for Radio Times with the late Billy T. James. Craig Scott with the Neil Sedaka, Harold Greenfield song. Well, early in the history lesson, we told you that the Beatles arrived in front of 7,000 people in Wellington. Yeah, what a great day for all. And we hope for some audio with this, but I'm just looking at the Beatles, and Ringo's got a poi. Oh, fabulous stuff. Yeah, this is pretty silent stuff at the present moment.
Like being dragged through a crowd by a fella three times your size.
Well, I didn't see anybody 17 foot nine, did you?
He was a great big security corps fellas.
Aye, I don't think he was 17 foot nine, though, was he?
17 foot nine, that's all good.
Quick calculation. No, you should have worked that out, shouldn't you?
Well, I did.
A third of 17 foot nine.
All right, come on. Let's...
Yeah.
Tell me, how do the fans react in Australia?
Marvellous, great.
Compared to the United States, how are
they? Roughly the same as the United States.
And England?
The same.
Do you find any difference with them?
Not up to now. There may be.
How are you liking this applause? Is it going to your head at all?
No. Well, it goes to my ears, but...
Do you think you'll be able to do without it in times to come?
Oh, I don't know. When the time comes, we'll see. You know.
The fun of the Beatles, a Fab Four at Free FM 89.0, arriving in Wellington, and the song was number one at the time.
It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night, I should be sleeping like a log. But when I get home to you, I find the things that you do will make me feel alright. You know I work all day to get your money to buy a thing, and it's worth it just to hear you say you're gonna give me everything. So why on earth should I moan? 'Cause when I get you alone, you know I feel okay.
That's the Beatles on A Hard Day's Night at 3FM 89.0. Do you remember some of the concerts you went to during the 60s if you're around my age range? Well, I was there the night in May 1966 when the famous Scottish singer and entertainer Andy Stewart performed at the Founders Theatre in Hamilton as part of the massive Carriage Odeon presented national tour. The concert series was officially called the new 1966 Andy Stewart Show. And it played on the 13th of May 1966 and the 14th of May 1966. And, of course, in the lineup was Ian Parry and his band, Mickey Ainsworth, Dave Barclay, Pam Brough, Arthur Eason, Jimmy Blue, Sally Logan, Joe Gordon, and Max Kay here. And that is in the Founders Theatre, May 1966. I was here with my father. And here we go with Andy Stewart at 1 o'clock. This one's for the farmers.
vanavond gelachen. Dan denken de zien vanavond die Roen kan bouwen te clean. En klatert hem zelf recht op de ene te maken. Het jongen is bijra. Weer Robbie de Rocky en we leiden doe die al bij verzelf. En Tini McCrew en Abbe die als de kut had of de ploe te maken. Het jongen is bijra. Als ik in de schatter was Abbe die in 5 mijl. Oh, why you could hear that in. Even de werk hoe had de grinnen te maken. Het jongen is bijra. De Bobby kom doen, de kwel doen de zoen. De kreter gaat los, wat de riksie daar voen. Die fel in de midden was leek te droen. Het te maken, het Jordi's bijra. De weg die om zijn ze te varen. En bitch, de wheel carries on. En die op heeft het hits. Los, you should have seen how she did. De splits, het te maken, het Jordi's bijra. O, sick in a sutter was abidi. In 5 mijl, oh, why you could hear the din. Even the verico had to grin. Het te maken, het Jordi's bijra. Oh, the whiskey get run, Tommy flee in the dew. And nigh as they drank, the mare they got foo. The only in sober, the calf and the coo. At the muck in the Geordie's byre, Tommy roars out, ring the bell, no for mare. Sign he tug at the coo's tail and pulled out a hair. She kick a duty, get up there at the muck in the Geordie's byre. Horsic in the sutter was abity and 5 mile away you could hear the din. Even the verico had to grin at the muck in the Geordie's byre. Such a stream ash was there to see. 5 miles away you could hear the melee. Even the domesticated animals were consumed with glee at the cleansing of George's cow shed. Oh, sick in the shutter was Abedi. In 5 mile away you could hear the din. Even the vertical had to grin at the mugging of Geordie's bar.
Yes, he was here in 1966, Andy Stewart of the Founders Theatre. He was here again in 1981 on tour, and his final ever New Zealand tour, the year he died in 1993. I was in Auckland living at the time, and I actually saw him in his final performance. He was not a well man that night, and of course he died of a heart attack in October of 1993. He was only aged 59. Good afternoon, Stephen King.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, well, you heard the words foo in that song. Foo is Scottish for drunk.
Oh.
And he released a whole heap of songs in a drunken mode because he was an impressionist. Anyway.
But he's only 59.
Yeah, that is a heart attack. There's a interview somewhere with Dylan Tate on his health conditions and all that too. I may play a bit of that on another day, but we've got to get round to problems. I want to talk about gambling, which goes hand in hand with taking alcohol and drugs. Your thoughts?
Well, my betters tell me, you know, gambling is actually a more powerful addiction than introducing a substance such as drugs and alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very powerful, gambling.
Were you ever a gambler yourself?
No, not really.
Yep.
That's a golden Kiwi ticket.
Yeah. Everybody remembers the golden Kiwi ticket, and of course we've got Lotto. But I see people around the money machines looking for some money to go into the bars and have a go at the pokies, which I think is detriment to their health.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is what it is, mm-hmm. And we can't change that. I'm just trying to think of the local trust involved in the pokey machines. Now, what's the name of it?
Oh, there's been so many of them.
What the one?
Because a lot of the bars have gone from the centre of town that had the pokey machines in the back room.
Yeah.
I know there's pokey machines at the Cosmopolitan Club in Claudelands. Drinking and gambling. Anyway, we've got to get on to the drugs.
Drugs. Well, it's my trust is we opened on Solstice in 2001. My charitable trust, when I say it's mine because I'm the founder of it, it's, please excuse me.
Yeah.
We're 25 years today.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah, well, you know, people with addiction problems, I started to notice in my own recovery journey, then I started to notice that actually taking time out away from the bottle store, away from the pokey machines and away from the drug dealer seems to be the most effective way for people to stop, because once they get past the detox, not just the physical detox, but past the detox of escape,
yep,
that drugs and alcohol give them an escape from their reality,
mm-hmm,
that they actually start to experience the reality without having to escape.
One of the underlying problems, and I've seen this, is that domestic violence is also involved in the house, so someone has to get out of the house, so they take it out on the poking machines.
Oh, there's all of those things going on. We've got ourselves in quite... Humanity's got itself in quite a state from where I'm sitting because of there's an intermix. It's not just about housing and putting food on the table and paying the power bill. There's all the domestic stuff that you mention. The boyfriend's not only the boyfriend, but he's also the drug dealer, and you can't get rid of the boyfriend without getting rid of the drug dealer, mm-hmm, vice versa. And there's all those complexities of state, and now you've got intergenerational using.
Yep, yep.
It's a biggie. I don't like to exaggerate it. It is what it is, and we do our best to help those who arrive at a place. External motivating factors, we call them. They don't want to live the life that comes with it anymore, and they make a decision to seek help.
Yep. Of course, I read the papers, and I look at the court cases and the district court, the high court, family court, and...
Yeah,
drugs are involved, as the judge sums up, like Thomas Ingram this week on one case, and much, much more. And, of course, you can't stop the drugs coming into any country in the world.
No, you can't. And we're quite attractive. We're only a small marketplace, but we have a high return for the sale of.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we are out in the middle of the ocean. We can't, and I've said it many times before, and customs and the police confirm, we just cannot stop it from getting in.
Do you know if the police do check? I've got a police liaison officer with all the bars and clubs around the town. I wonder if he's still working and he checks out at all the liquor licences in the bars and clubs.
I believe they're doing their best with the resources they have,
yep,
at hand.
Yeah, and... Another problem too is when it comes to domestic violence, the kids are caught up in the middle of the battle of the parents, and where's the counselling for the kids?
Well, there's been a lot of resources. It's the one thing that Matt Ducey's got right, you know, early intervention, prevention, and we've put a lot of resources into youth. It doesn't necessarily mean they won't go on to experiment with. So it's a matter of providing them with the honest truth of the situation, but getting to a place of becoming defensive or intrinsic. We've got to be... it's the growing up developmental stage 4 or 5, the family therapists tell me. So you can't dictate to young people what they will or won't do. If you try and do that, they will strive to become adults before their time.
The thing is, too, that I'm just been mentioning earlier, that this is going to put more pressure on households. The council is going to install water meters around the city. That'll probably push rates up, and that puts more pressure on the household.
Yeah, and now we're going to drug test people driving for MDMA and cannabis and alcohol. Yeah.
Do you think that's the right move?
Yes, I do, because I don't think we have any other truth. I'm not an advocate for extreme reactionary results. Like, we're not going to call out the National Guard and try and win the war of the drugs, because the war of the drugs is already lost.
Yeah, no, I've seen the drug testing in Australia on those reality programs where they pulled over on the side of the road and the drug tested, and then in Australia you're automatically arrested and taken off to the jailhouse. So,
well, it's other countries in the world. Yeah. They take you out the back and put a bullet in the back of your head too.
I've seen those photos in one particular country. So
we're doing our best mm-hmm. with with what we've got. One of the points that brings me here today, Bruce, is the thing that I want your listeners to get. So my phone, I've actually resigned my job. I'll be finishing up at the end of the 28th.
Yes. But
there's certain work that I will be continuing on with.
Yep.
So I won't be running the support house operation. I've already got my successor all lined up and the rest of it. But the work I speak of is the calls I get almost on a daily basis from the frustrated family members who have become aware of, often it's the children, or it can be the sister or the uncle, often it's that they've discovered that their family member is using illicit drugs, and they're seeing the damage that it's causing, the reclusiveness, the not being around, the breakdown of the family relationship. And a point I want to make with our listeners is the answer that I've developed over the years. And there's many different pathways as well. So it's quite complex, but it kind of goes like this. That you have to, it's kind of like your loved one, your child, has two personalities.
Yes.
One is the addictive personality. The other is the loving child that you remember before they grew into the state of using substances, those things. So you've got to know which one you're talking to when you're talking to it. And the hard stuff is with the addictive personality, because it is deceptive, dishonest, will lie, will say and do whatever it can to carry on. And the loving family members who are frustrated by this need to recognise that and be equipped with what they're going to do. And that is often contracting with the family member to get them to a place of considering change. Notice the emotive language.
Yes,
because it's not going to happen. It's the most frustrating thing for the mothers of this country, that the love of a mother for their child will not win the battle with addiction.
Yep. So you're talking about a Jekyll and Hyde type of personality?
Yes, if you want to describe it like that. But the answer lies in doing a deal with the addictive personality. So addiction, for example, requires several things. It requires money, because drugs drugs cost money.
Mm-hmm. So this is why we have all these people around town shoplifting, and they on-sell the goods, and that buys the drugs.
Yes, that's right. But then you get a lot of current thinking in the community of, if he can just get a job, he'll be okay. Well, no, not really. If he gets a job, he then earns money, and then he carries on with the addiction. So when people say he hasn't got a job, I go, great. Well, the job that's coming up for him or her is one of recovery, and that requires a daily commitment to not picking up that first drug. But you've got to negotiate the contract, because they're often got no money, nowhere to stay, no car. Oh, great, no car, so not mobile. Excellent. No money, no car, and nowhere to stay. That gives the family the footing to then do the deal with their loved one and try and get to that place of the Jekyll and Hyde, you put it.
Yes, yep.
The addictive personality and the loving child you remember, because that one will return. That's the good news I have for your listeners today, Bruce, is that loving child is still in there, and when they get clean, they will return.
The thing is, too, that an employer wants to see the real guy or girl, and they've got to look at their record. And when it comes to, I know a lot of employers drug test their prospective and current employees, and a lot of these people would fail a drug test if they were employed.
Like I say, it's a complex subject, and of course the addictive personality has ways around all of that as well. But eventually, generally it comes late 20s and into the early 30s, the addictive personality starts to become aware that the shit they've got themselves into is going to continue, and it's going to get worse if they continue with it. So that then opens the door for discussion.
You're standing back. Is it age, or you just want to do something else at the moment?
Well, my confession is that I changed my own addiction. You see, there's no curing the addictive personality. You can get it into remission. I swapped it for the passion of trying to help others find the the find the journey that I found 35 years ago, that there is a life after alcohol and drugs, and it's very worthwhile. But passion comes with side effects, and the side effects of that is not taking care of self, stress, burnout, etc. I've got a whole lot of that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Plus, I'm 72, so yep. I've done a good, reasonably good job of the place. I'm handing it over. I'm hopeful that it'll go on beyond me, and my successor will take it.
Well, next time you come to see us, you'll still come and see us, of course, and you can bring your successor in. We'll have a chat to him too. We'll have a chat to her too. Bring her in with you.
Yeah. Well, she's from the recovery background, like us, lived experience people. We
want you to bring her in next time she comes, and we're not going to lose you. You're going to be still here. And
Look, I'm not leaving the planet well just yet, but I am 72. And, you know, my peers encouraging me to have some, you know.
Yes, yep.
Enjoy the latter part of my life, and that's exactly what I intend to do. Yeah,
well, I'm going to be 70 in February next year. And
Really?
Yep, true. Yeah, I've had all those things tell me, you're not 70, you look more like 50, but I'll show you the birth certificate. Anyway, Stephen, we'll see you in a couple of weeks' time. Enjoy your Sunday afternoon. Keep warm.
Yes, indeed. It's keep dry. It's more the point.
Anyway, Stephen King had Free FM 89.0.
There's a wee lassie, and her name is Mary Mac. Her maiden name is Mac, and she's the lass I'm going to tack. I know a lot of fellas that would like to be on her track, but they think they'll have to get there very early. For this wee lassie, she's got a lot of gas. I ain't got a lot of cash, and her father thinks I'm class. And I would be an ass for to let the matter pass, for her father thinks I shoot her very fairly. No, Mary Mac's father's making Mary Mac marry me, and my father's making me marry Mary Mac. So I'll have to marry Mary for Mary to take care of me, and I'll be making Mary when I marry Mary Mac. No, Mary and her mother go an awful lot together. I, in fact, you hardly ever see the one without the other. And the folk, I wonder whether it is Mary or her mother, or the better than together that I'm courting. It'll be a grand affair, it will be grander than a fair. There'll be a coach and pair for rich and fair, and every pair that's there. There's sure to be a lot of fun, I'm sure to get my share. If I didn't, I'll be very much mistaken. Hello, Mary Mac's father's making Mary Mac marry me, and my father's making me marry Mary Mac. So I'll have to marry Mary for Mary to take care of me, and I'll be making Mary when I marry Mary Mac. Mary and her mother go an awful lot together. I can back you, I'll never see the end without the other. And the folk, I wonder whether it is Mary or her mother, or the better than together that I'm courting. Or the beat of the girl that I'm courting.
Andy Stewart, Free FM 89.0. And that is, of course, called Mary Mac. And that is from Andy Stewart. As I said, he appeared here in Hamilton in May of 1966. And I was there that night. It's a cold day in Waikato. And I think we better play a song. It's called Wind and Rain. We've got plenty of that today.
It's 2 a.m.
This is Craig Scott.
I hit town again, and I jumped off a big freight train. As quiet as a mouse, I went up on his house, and I tapped on a window pane. She said, "I come on in, you're looking soaked to the skin. Get out of the wind and rain." She sat on a bed and smiled as she said, "It's good to have you back again." Turn out the light, make the most of the night. I'm only here till morning. Then I must go from the firelight glow. The wind and the rain are calling. Body wet, tears of joy for a long could never be. So I got up slow, said I really gotta go, going back to the wind and rain. But by the sleep of light, some cold rainy night, you know I'm coming back again. The wind.
Craig Scott, who this day was number one in New Zealand with Star-Crossed Lovers. That's from 1973 on a Sunday afternoon. Just reminding you, let's take a look at some of the headlines in Hamilton during the week. A lot of people are unhappy because we're going to get water meters rolled out over the next 2 years. What else has been happening? Well, Russell Armitage spoke out about the Victoria Street bus rejig, which has sparked commuter fury. This is on Victoria Street. And what else has been happening around the world? Well, when we talk to Gary shortly, it looks that it's only lasted a couple of days. The truce and the Versailles Agreement, it's been breached by Israel, and they've just taken on Lebanon. So, and I think Mr. Benjamin Netanyahu got his nose out of joint because he wasn't involved. More on that later. Good afternoon, Mel.
Good afternoon. The immediacy of emails is never more apparent than when acquaintances of old float into our realms of thought with a welcome email from the other side of the world, where the occasion of midsummer brings the abundance of the season to life, here described by Ingrid, writing from her homeland, Sweden, to the Kiwi friend from 60 years ago. I'm writing sitting outside our summer house, listening to the blackbird's wonderful song, thinking of you on the other side of the world. I hope you're all well. Yesterday, we danced round the midsummer's tree, which we had dressed in all the beautiful flowers we are surrounded with just now. Perhaps you remember what it's like. It's so nice and dear to us, but in such a short period compared with your seasons in New Zealand. We're still enjoying here this simple life in our little paradise, some watching the world Football Championship on television. We're all sending you our best wishes and lots of hugs from Sweden. Your friend, Ingrid. And our next guest in Cosmopolitan News and Views today may remember the days of the blue paper of the aerogram, which is roughly the equivalent of the modern email, don't you think? Elaine McDonnell of Hamilton. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Mel.
You remember those aerograms?
I do, yes.
You grew up in Dunedin.
Yes.
And something stands out about this period when you were young there.
Yes.
And what was it? Your family had noticed some new people in town.
Yes. Do you want me to talk about those? Yes, well, as you said, I grew up in New Zealand, and it was at a time in the late 1940s and all during the 1950s when former refugees from the Second World War, a number of them arrived in New Zealand, and some of them came to Dunedin. In fact, my first ballet dancer was a former ballet dancer from Estonia who had been taken by the Russians from her home country to Europe. And she ended up in some sort of refugee place in Europe. And New Zealand, with other nations, went to choose people or bring people back to their home, to their own countries.
Were a lot of them Jews because of Hitler's campaign against the Jewish population around Europe at the time? Were a lot of these people that came to Dunedin of the Jewish faith?
Well, I did grow up with one Jewish family, but they had escaped just before the war from Vienna. These particular people that I knew were a group of Estonian women who had young dependent children of about 3 years old. And later on, the daughter, I grew up with them, and the daughter of one of them became my good friend. And she said, her mother said, when the Americans came looking to take people back to the US, they chose single, strong, young people who were obviously able to work. She said, but they didn't look at us.
Other than our Maori citizens, most of us trace back to someone who came breaking the traditions of staying at home.
Yes.
And settling far from where they had yes. originated. In your family?
Yes, very much so. As I said, Tina's mother said she would always be grateful to New Zealand for taking women with dependent children when no one else would. And for me, my family, they were also facing difficulties both in Inverness in Scotland and in Sweden.
Sweden too?
Yes, yes, yes.
The Scandinavians contributed so much around Ekatahuna, I think it was, where there was a camp.
Yes, well, they came by ship. There was a ship full of Scandinavians from Norway and Denmark and Sweden. And these people arrived in Napier and were told, here's the new life for you, and you're going to go to a place called, well, I don't know if it was Dannevirke at that stage, but it became Dannevirke. Unfortunately, there wasn't much transport. The women and children travelled in wagons, and the men walked from Napier to what is now Dannevirke.
They were different days.
Well, they expected to find houses, but what they found instead was a forest, and they had to cut trees and make them into planks and build homes in order to have a house.
Of course, we do know that Dannevirke has a high Dutch population and other areas around that particular part of the North Island. So there's a lot of European influence yes. on the lower North Island.
Yes.
Do you think it influenced your life, having that early contact with people from far away?
From far away, yes. I grew up, my parents, when I think about it, were very hospitable and would invite newcomers for afternoon tea, usually, on a Sunday.
Oh, and
that was what happened in Dunedin.
And a child, as you were,
yes,
has a better chance of figuring out who's what.
Yes, yes, yes. I was always intrigued by these people who didn't speak much English, but who did their very best.
Yeah.
And the children also. There were also, there was a Russian family I knew, and of course the Austrian Jewish family I grew up with as well. Yeah.
As a young person, did you also have time to listen to the radio and the music and the talks, etc.?
Oh, always listen to the radio. In fact, my mother used to say, if you could get inside that thing, you would, because I would have to get right up close to the radio to hear the serials and the stories. And
you remember some of them by title, what they were called?
I always remember on Anzac Day, they used to have a reading of the snow goose.
The snow goose?
You know that?
Yeah.
Was it the snow? Yes, when the man went out in his boat to rescue people at Dunkirk.
Yeah, I think there's a issue with that particular story over the years, and I'd love to play it, but there's just a few issues with the story.
There may well be. Yeah. But for me, that was magic.
So New Zealand Radio at that time, and I grew up with this too, of children's request shows.
Yes.
Around 7:30 on a Sunday morning, which we dearly miss these days.
Oh, I used to be in Sunday school and Bible class on a Sunday morning, so that was it.
Mm. These early influences
yes.
expressed culture
yes.
as came naturally to our families, where
yes.
we were
yes,
growing up,
yes, yes.
influenced by these events, and even the radio was able to permeate through the culture that comes
yes.
of listening. Do you listen much to radio nowadays?
All the time. Yes, I always have Radio New Zealand on. If I'm at home and I'm not involved in something else, I listen to that a lot, yes.
You can do other things while
yes.
listening.
Yes, you can.
Not so easily achieved. It used to be common to setting would be housewife at home doing the ironing.
I can remember Portia Faces Life.
Things have changed.
Yes.
There was no knowing how it would end up, but here we are.
Yeah, here we are, community radio.
And you're still interested in helping people learn our language.
Yes, yes. I trained as a primary school teacher and then moved into adult literacy. When we think of people who grow up still unable to read or write, and then became involved with refugee communities, and the opportunity came to train as an ESOL teacher, so...
English as a second language.
Yes, yes, yes. English for speakers of other languages, that's what it is.
Here's a memory from Children's Requests. This is from 1946. This is the American actress Loretta Young. This is the story of the littlest angel.
Minutely examine the long list of new arrivals, although all heaven knew that he couldn't read a word. And he idled more than several immortal moments to carefully examine a display of Orient harps.
Takes you back, doesn't it?
Yes, yes. Well, there were lots and lots of stories, and we could, I don't know about you, but sit around the radio in the evenings and listen to Selwyn Toogood, What's in the Bag?
It's in the bag.
It's in the bag, and various... cereals, I suppose.
Yes. What'll it be? The money or the bag? What do you say, audience?
Yeah, and they won a washing machine or something. It was wonderful.
He was a very good compere.
It was.
Brilliant.
Yes.
And we learnt by listening. All those quiz questions.
Yes.
Did you know any who actually went on the program? Any from your locality?
No, I didn't.
Because those who do were quite proud of them, because you had to be pretty good to get there.
Yes, yes, I think so.
And they made a lot of money sometime.
Yep.
Or it might be
Let's try this.
Is bag number eight there, Heather? Yes. I'll offer you $100, the money or the bag. Now, it's been running from the competitors tonight except for that last one. $100, the money or the bag. At $100, what should she do, customers?
No, I'll take the money.
You're taking the money at $100. Heather, tell us what is in the bag, please.
The Atlas Americana cooker with the thermo wave oven.
Well, that is the late Selwyn Toogood. That's actually from the television series that's in the bag. And, of course, Heather Eggleton was the co-host of that particular show. Selwyn Toogood, he was a man who hosted, of course, the... hit parade shows. Remember them? It was done by a soap company. I forget it, but it'll come to me next week. But yeah, great man, Selwyn Toogood.
People who are learning a language do best when it's fun.
Yes, very much.
Maybe there was a time before when teaching dictated it was strictly to be followed and done according to almost military expectations.
Yes, yes.
It's a lot more relaxed in the case of refugees, do you find?
Depends who they are, and it depends on whether they've had any education or not.
A vast difference.
A vast difference, yes. And for many of them, education was interrupted. I think it's fun. I can remember learning French at school and, you know, it was all grammar and everything. But the French lessons we really enjoyed was once a week when our French teacher played the piano and we sang songs in French.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fun and we loved that.
Did you ever see the movie Casablanca, where in the middle of the movie they all stood up and the Nazis got very angry and the Marseillaise was played in the middle of the movie Casablanca? Remember that?
Yes, yes. It's a wonderful film. Yes, yes.
You had occasion recently to come upon two speeches.
Yes.
Two speeches with different after effects. Tell us about that experience and what we might take from it.
Well, I saw on Facebook the an article about the award for secondary school children.
The Race Unity.
The Race Unity Award. I believe it was sponsored by the Baha'i
community. The Baha'i and other groups.
Yes, and the New Zealand Police, mm-hmm. Human Rights Commission and others all you know, back that.
Because despite what's happening currently overseas, we might all stand to gain from racial unity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, I just sort of looked at it and pressed the button, as you do, and saw this young Sikh man, I think he's 18,
yep.
Amanjot Singh, and his speech it was just wonderful. And he talked about prejudice and the importance of listening to people.
I actually saw the Facebook feedback after it. It was not nice. It was racist.
Really?
Yep. We've got a lot of racism in this country.
Of course.
And this young man, and I've been to the Hamilton Race Unity speeches, and some of these young people, they don't need this feedback, the racist talk against them.
Yep.
You were struck by another speech not long after that left a very different taste.
Yes. I sent information about Amanjot's speech to many friends and said, look at this, and listen. And it was so uplifting. And then, that was in May, and then a week ago, apparently, there was a meeting in Cambridge of a political party, and a certain, as I describe in my letter, elderly politician addressed the crowd, which was really large, and, well, he did a bit of a rant, really, and it was very unpleasant, and he went on about a number of things, but he finished up by talking about the India Free Trade Agreement and warning that many, many Indians would be coming to this country and taking your kids' jobs.
It was Winston Peters, because I saw the ad in the paper and online about this meeting. And, yep, no, he is outspoken, because in Parliament he pulls MPs up when they ever mention Aotearoa New Zealand. He doesn't like that. But Aotearoa is one of the official names of this country.
It is indeed. And in my class, I refer to this country as Aotearoa New Zealand. Yes.
And you compare it with how things were when the arrival of the refugees from, in the case you mentioned, from Europe.
Yes.
The people of Estonia.
Yes.
They were facing Soviet.
Yes.
Jurisdictions.
And my friend's mother, her sister was taken to the salt mines in Siberia, and many of family never returned. Yes.
Another sad moment in world history. Many people say that the Russians were more dangerous than the Germans ever were because of Stalin.
Well, that's a subject we might embark upon
in our next
interview, in fact.
Yeah.
We can find out what our political commentator.
Yeah. Thank you for coming in this afternoon.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Yes.
We're going to play the theme to a television series which starred an Austrian Jew. His name was Werner Kempler, best known as Colonel Klink in Hogan's Heroes. He was a refugee from his country along with his world-famous conductor father. Werner Kempler, he's known as Colonel Klink. And he went to America and became such a famous actor and violinist.
Thank you.
best in me. I will find what I can be. If I win, lose, or draw, there's a winner in us all. It's the world in union. The world as one, as we love to meet our destiny. And
it is world in union. That is Dame Kitty Takanawa at Free FM 89.0. Hey, before we talk to Gary Schofield, I've got to play this because this is Andy Stewart talking on the origins of one particular song.
The gentleman was producing at that time, Ian McFadden, was producing me in radio, and he said, I'm starting this show called The White Heather Club, and I'm afraid there's no place for in it for you, Andy, because, you know, I was an impressionist at that time, and he said to me, you know, I know you do comedy voices and all the rest of it. What we're looking for is somebody who can do Buffy ballads. Now, I know there are all these apocryphal stories, like when you go for a part in a Western, they say, can you ride a horse? And whether you've never seen a horse in your life, you say, yes. But I, in actual fact, with a great deal of veracity, said, well, I can sing some Buffy ballads. He said, sing one for me now. And my goodness me, there were people in cubicles who had forgotten what they went in there for. And I sang a wee, perhaps unsuitable for a gent's toilet, I sang a song. I sang a song called The Muck in a Johnny's Fire. Whereupon we passed around the shovels and the sawdust and I got a job.
Yeah, that is Andy Stewart, and he went on to world fame. Good afternoon, Gary Schofield.
Good afternoon.
Ukraine carries the burden of trying to protect its integrity as a nation, a heavy onus to carry. Hindsight may show where opportunities to negotiate to end hostilities might have succeeded and avoided all this bloodshed. Gary Schofield.
Well, I was just philosophizing about how, through the decades, the US has always tried to prove it could win conflict by bombing. And we have, of course, a wonderful example of how that can fail in Iran, and it's failed in many other attempts. So that's the overwhelming superiority of Air Force. So what we have at the moment is people are excited about the new era in the war in Ukraine, where Moscow is now being bombed. So I would just say that despite, and putting to one side the fact that each side is blowing up the oil wells of the other, and we should be concerned about what this might affect the planet, there is the other point of, we know that bombing doesn't work. It didn't work in the Blitz. Countries don't surrender with bombing. It's troops on the ground. We are escalating the war in Russia. We are actually fighting a nuclear-armed power. So I would just question some of the military strategy in that escalation, and whether or not that is actually a good thing, and is it better to actually negotiate an end to that war that has been going on now for longer than World War II? Just might be just a thought on the topic.
The Ukraine's drones are delivering death deep into Russian territory. Could it lead to potentially a coup of some kind, as popular opinion in Russia reacts to that?
Well, I do suspect very strongly that that is part, at least from the Ukraine point of view, I don't know about all Western countries, but I do see this as a theme of a strategy. So winning the war by having the government topple, by the way, we've just seen that in Iran and it wasn't a success, but what if there is a collapse of the Russian government and it does split into military factions? You've got a country with tens of thousands of nuclear weapons, suitcase nuclear weapons, you know, not only strategic nuclear weapons, but tactical nukes. And they split into factions of a military kind. You could have nuclear terrorism on an enormous scale. And that's not just in Russia. That's affecting the Northern Hemisphere. So I wonder at the wisdom of that strategy also.
Good afternoon, Gary. How are we? You've got a bit of a cold there, mate. Look after yourself.
I have. It's the season to be jolly, isn't it? It happens to all of us occasionally. Well, but I'm doing well, thank you. Well, and I did have some other quick news,
yep.
And I you know, just, you know, Tulsi Gabbard, we talked about her last week. She's stepping down now. And, yes, on the one hand, you're looking at the dissolving of some of the administration of Trump. But an honorable person, she's come out last week by saying that the Ukrainian biolabs were real. There were 40 of them in Ukraine, and she's released those documents. She's now come out and said that Fauci, who was, we all think of as the godfather, the friendly face, getting us through COVID, well, by the look of it, was our lie to Congress about gain-of-function research that his own group was involved with in Wuhan. And if he's involved with gain-of-function and lied about it, and don't forget, there was the competing theory that there was a lab leak, or was it an evolved? Is it natural or is it man-made? And as soon as the genome was sequenced, it was discovered, the furin cleavage site was spliced into it to attack humans easier. So as soon as that was known, it was known that this was a lab man-made, COVID was man-made. And of course, that whole lab idea, it turns out that it was a horseshoe bat from Yunnan province. That's 1,000 miles from Wuhan. So somebody must have brought it there to Wuhan. Yeah. So all these little details from 5 years ago, and a lot of people, when they said that it was, you know, our man-made virus, that was, they were taken off Facebook. They couldn't have their viewpoint, and they were called conspiracy theorists. And it now looks like we need to give them a bit of an apology.
Yeah. Anyway, it's been a bad week for Trump at the G7 and in France. He got isolated. He just stood there, and they ignored him. And he came into the meeting, and he said, "Oh, this meeting hall is too cold." Mark Carney from Canada said to him, "And I've heard the audio. Get real."
Hey, well, what about the story with Giorgia Meloni of Italy?
Yeah, I heard that.
Where he's saying, "Oh, she's so desperate to have me get into a photo with her because of her popularity is so weak in her own country," and that's caused a real furor in Italy, and the foreign minister is no longer visiting the U.S. It's a major event, and it's kind of being depicted as like the squabbling of a schoolyard. However, I think we need to add some substance to the story, because what this is really over, I'm sure, and according to the administration, is because Italy denied the United States its military bases at a time of war. So whether or not you're for the Iranian war, here is an ally from the U.S. point of view that is letting them down in a time of war, and I think that this squabbling actually reflects the underlying friction between the United States and European powers that were not there for them during the Iran war.
Yeah, and finally, of course, Benjamin Netanyahu's got his nose out of joint, so his forces attack Lebanon, and it puts his current the Treaty of Versailles Mark II. It's a bit shaky at the moment.
It sure does.
Is Russia?
It sure makes an enormous difference and could be torn up because of it. So the whole future, financial future, of course, economic future, military future, is dependent upon whether or not Trump could rein in Benjamin Netanyahu to his own wishes.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll see if that actually occurs.
Another rumor going around Washington at the moment, and I've seen some of the news items, is that as President Trump and his wife are separating. I don't know if there's any truth to that, but they do lead separate lives, of course, but this could be official, so watch the space. Hey, mate.
Indeed.
We'll let you go and take care of your cold.
I will. Thank you for that.
It's a pleasure, mate.
Good to talk.
It's a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Oh, it's bad talking on the radio or on the phone with a cold.
Is Russia, or at least Mr. Putin, on his last legs in Ukraine?
Yeah, well, Gary's gone, but he started to cough, so, but... Yeah, we'll leave them go. We'll have that question again next week. Mel, good afternoon, Mr. Porter.
Dwayne.
Good afternoon.
Porter. Shipping report.
Yep.
What's to say?
Well, it's been pretty well busy at the moment. You know, we've got export logs going in, export logs going out, you name it. They've been loading all sorts, and like got 7 petrol boats arriving in very soon.
There's one that came up from Napier, I believe.
Yep.
Angel Island.
Yep.
What'll it be doing?
Logs.
Korea?
Yep.
Okay. Kiwi Trader, the same day from Auckland going to Brisbane, and that's on the 20th, yesterday.
Yeah, she loaded a load of containers, and so there was two that went on the same day. There's going to be, it just changes, very changes at the moment, Mel, because, you know, you got to look at it as that all the water are getting full, everyone's sending a lot of stuff out. Even now that we heard that they could be opening up the border line for Dubai for a load of cars or crushed cars to go to Dubai.
Have there been passenger vessels involved in the Tauranga port?
Yes, had one arrived in and she went out to the sea, so I don't know which port she was going to.
And the Maersk Rio Delta.
Yep.
That left to come to New Zealand. Should have berthed yesterday, did it?
Yes, she berthed yesterday, so she won't be leaving until about the 27th, 28th.
Carrying?
Containers.
Hmm.
So there's about, there's going to be about 147,000 tonne of containers going on that boat. Or up. So yep. You know, you're looking at just on average between the containers and the logs, more weight of the logs is about 136,000 tonne, or what they're carrying.
Yep.
But the problem is that they've got to try and keep it even, because like when that arena went over, they loaded from one side, but they didn't even up from the other side. And that's how she actually hit the rocks.
Anyway, that is it for the shipping report for today. As I said earlier, on 21 June 1964, 7,000 Wellingtonians met the Beatles at the airport. Wellington, and of course they performed at the Wellington Town Hall in June of 1964. You heard the interview a little earlier with the boys making a lot of fun and Ringo playing the poi and all that in Wellington. Good afternoon, sir.
Oh, good afternoon. Elon Musk, the first person to earn a trillion dollars. Now, I can't figure out how he achieved that. I mean, he's obsessed with going to Mars. That'll never happen because it'll take too long to get there. And the journey back will probably be near impossible. Be a one-way trip. There's no oxygen up there. There's no life. There's not even a weed growing out of the ground. It's just a rock in space. So what's the obsession? And how does he raise such vast amounts of money for a futile project? I mean, why go back to the moon again? If the moon was a lifelike planet, I could understand it. It could be trade and interchange and whatnot.
Yep.
But it's just another rock in space.
Yeah, no.
Planet Earth.
Look, that guy seriously... He's seriously... evil. He's got about 13 children from many of his partners and...
Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Yeah. It staggers me that he's worth so much money.
Oh, he's making... A lot of that money has come from the American government, actually, his links with Donald Trump.
Well, some of the answers might lie in the closing films of the French Film Festival, the one showing today at 4:45 being entitled in French but translated, The Richest Woman in the World.
Well, that lets us out.
Yeah, me too.
and what time is that, Mel?
At 4:45 today, and the last of the films, Colours of Time, screens at 7:15.
And great movie theatre is the Lido, and you can have a drink, a beverage, and an ice cream. And love having an ice cream at the movies. Well, we've been looking back at history. We've had a person concerned with refugees, and we talked about one refugee, Werner Kempler from Hogan's Heroes, Colonel Klink. He was an Austrian Jew along with John Banner. So let's leave you with the outer credits of Hogan's Heroes. We're out of here.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.